Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Interesting week. Impeachment officially got started off. How you doing, first of all? How's the arm?
Good. It's a slow process dealing with healing and being limited in range of motion. As I was telling you earlier, I'm trying not to complain too much just because, I've got a close friend who doesn't have the use of his left arm, or actually his right arm, and so I try not to complain too much about it, but I mean, it's not ideal. But hey, listen, it's my left hand, so I could still write and wipe my own ass, so I'm good.
Mr. Positivity, I like it.
Yeah.
All right, so impeachment articles have been delivered to the Senate. There was some shenanigans back and forth with, well, we're not accepting them until tomorrow. To me, this has been the most childish exchange, and I'm putting blame on everyone. I mean, this feels so unofficial, I don't want to say unethical because that's the wrong word. It feels just unprofessional. It feels like a bunch of fucking children.
Yeah, I mean, it's very politically charged. And this is Alexander Hamilton, who is, really one of our forefathers in terms of creating the Constitution. This is one of the biggest fears with impeachment in this process, but he also was the person who fought the hardest for having this process in the Constitution and having it put together the way that it is, where the articles are bought by Congress and then the trial happens in the Senate as opposed to the Supreme Court, which is what some of the founders wanted. But this is exactly what he said. If you ever read the Federalist Papers, Federalist Paper number 65 is where he really talks about impeachment and the process. And he comes right out early on and he talks about how, listen, this process is going to be divisive. It's a political process. It's going to divide the country and people are going to side with their particular faction on what they, how they see the outcome in their, in their favor. And it's a really, really dangerous thing, but we have to have it in there. And so we're kind of seeing the worst fears of the founders and really kind of come to light in this process and the way it's being handled.
And the idea that we don't have a sneeze button.
No.
So the idea that this is going to go down straight down party lines, it appears nothing's ultimately going to happen. To me, shows how broken our system is right now. Because it just purely, all I hear about on political shows is, this will affect this senator's chances for re-election. That shouldn't be what drives us. I know it is. We're so far removed from the famous Profiles in Courage book where, John Kennedy authored a book that talked about times where people took political stands. I read it in like sixth grade because my dad made me. But this is the opposite of that. No one seems to want to do anything other than save their own ass. And maybe I'm allowing the punditry to drive it too much, and maybe there's more actual desire to do the quote-unquote right thing out there than we're seeing right now. But to me, it just looks like pure hackery, pure let me hang on to my cushy job. End
of story.
Well,
I don't know if that's true. And part of that is the limit that is being placed on the media's ability to be in the room while it's actually going on. They're imposing these really strict rules and the media is losing their mind over, and the pundits are all pissed off about it, and CNN and Fox News and MSNBC, they're trying to figure out if they can sue somebody fast enough to change the rules. They're actually putting, I may say this wrong, but like magnetometers or whatever, they're like these giant magnet things that basically don't allow cell phones and our digital devices to work, but they're putting them at multiple places around the area where the actual impeachment is going to happen so that people can't you know, record on, you know, like record with their phones or take notes or tweet out messages or whatever, which is a lot of stuff that was going on during the congressional inquiry into this whole thing. So I think because there will be limited access, right, and there's going to be one camera that's just kind of focused, I believe, on the speaker, on the Senate Majority Leader, and it's a different, if it's a much more strict process that's going to happen. Like, you can't just blurt things out. The senators aren't going to be able to go and do what they did during the inquiry, where the congressmen were. They would ask some questions, and then Devin Nunes would go on and say, well, you see, I think this is all a sham, and it's more blah, 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 and this and that. Like, that sort of stuff isn't going to be allowed to go on, you know, for or against the president. Now, you know, any questions or any statements that want to be made have to be written down and presented to the Senate Majority Leader or one of the managers, and then it'll filter its way up, and if they want to allow it, they can, or they won't. So there's going to be a limit on the amount of influence that you're going to have, and people aren't going to be able to use their own voice. So it will cut out a lot of the showboating that you saw in the first half of this. You know, even if you watched it or if you caught any of it.
I got way too much of it. I was driving that.
Well, you, but I mean, it's, yeah. You know, for the listener. But so, you know, that to me is a good thing. The amount of access that will be limited to it. And then I think that there are rumblings that there are some Republicans who, with kind of the way the last couple of weeks have gone, with the amount of information that's beginning to kind of trickle out, which kind of shows that maybe Pelosi made the right move by holding on to the articles of impeachment, just because, you know, you had mentioned Lev Parnas earlier. You know, we can bring him into the conversation, but this Lev Parnas guy, you know, had this firm that, I mean, for all intents and purposes, looks like they were just kind of, you know, laundering money and, you know, illegally using money in PACs and other things, and they were working for Rudy Giuliani, but they had hired Rudy Giuliani. It's a tangled web, to say the least. But you know, this guy is, you know, currently under indictment in the Southern District of New York, you know, for violating campaign finance laws and other things. But he has a ton of information, documents on his cell phone and on his laptops and computers and tablets that, you know, could very well implicate the president and the people around the president in terms of what they were trying to do with this whole Ukraine situation and manipulate the government of the Ukraine to out Joe and Hunter Biden specifically for political purposes and not for, you know, this whole thing about corruption.
Right. So couple of the big things that came out was that Lev Parnas went on MSNBC and CNN and basically told the same story. Now, he's not the most credible guy.
He's not credible at all, but if he has documents to back it up, if he has text messages with Devin Nunes and other people around the president and Rudy Giuliani, maybe possibly the president and other people, and you could clearly make the connection via cell phone numbers and, you know, and who they belong to, and he has other documents that back up some of the things that he's saying, then he may, you know, he may be a scumbag, but if he's got the proof, then he's got the proof.
Right. I mean,
and that's what I care about. I mean, his interview, I didn't watch his interview on MSNBC because I've got no way to confirm or deny what he's saying. But if all of a sudden I'm seeing documents and I'm seeing emails and I'm seeing text messages with certain people's names on them and their responses and WhatsApp conversations and all that stuff, that's a different ball game.
Right. I mean, I remember when the Reggie Bush scandal broke, the guy that made the accusations was a convicted felon and had a shady history. He also had audio tapes of everything. So they attacked his character and they're like, okay, press play.
I mean, and that's kind of the shady side of doing this, right? Like, you it's always that guy, right? I mean, like, and, you know, so be careful who you deal with, because, yeah, the guy's a scumbag, and you think that, well, I'm going to do this scumbag thing, and I'm going to use the scumbag to do it. Well, often those people know what their track record is, and they know that if shit goes down, they're the ones who are going to get thrown under the bus. So they're also, the thing about it being shady is that they're really good at covering their own tracks and covering their own ass. And by covering their own ass, that means whether it's recording or keeping documents or all this other stuff where you may just delete it off your phone because you don't want so-and-so to see it, whether it's a, you know, a wife or a business partner or whatever, you know, the shady guy you're dealing with is keeping all that information and making sure that he knows that it exists and that it's, you know, it's readily available for moments like this when he's under indictment and he needs to show that he's cooperating with the government to hopefully reduce his sentence. Oh, and also in case he wants to involve himself in something like an impeachment of a president.
Right, and you know, the worst part to me in this whole ordeal is I did watch Lev Parnas's interview on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and I looked at the guy and he's fighting the baldness as fighting a losing battle against baldness as badly as anyone. He looks awful, and I looked it up, and he's younger than I am.
That's crazy.
That was depressing to me.
It's crazy. I mean, like, someone put on Twitter and actually tweeted it out from our account that, you know, somehow Lev Parnas is younger than Jared Leto, and they put a, you know, a comparison picture of the two side by side, right? And Lev Parnas does. He looks terrible. You know, He's got the receding hairline and the fuzzy, you know, the peach fuzz hair around him. Right. It's like, let it go, just shave it off.
Dude.
And then he just, like, he looks like his blood pressure is probably through the roof. You know, he looks like he's one of those guys that's constantly sweating and doesn't carry anything to wipe the sweat off. Like, he looks like he probably smells like potatoes. Like, just fucking awful, right? Now, I mean, he's, you know, he's Eastern European, Ukrainian, right, whatever, himself, Russian, maybe. So, you know, he's got that Eastern European hard life look, you know, his clothes, like, he always wears a suit. In all his pictures, he's in a suit, but it's an ill-fitting suit. You know, the tie is always askew a little bit. The guy looks like a train wreck of a human being who you can probably guess that if you did a piss test at any given time, he's going to test positive for cocaine and alcohol and who knows what else.
Animal tranquilizers.
Right. And then they put him next to Jared Leto, who, you know, who's also playing a vampire. So, I mean, Jared Leto wins on that because, you know, he's Morbius.
Okay. I don't even know what
Morbius. He's a Marvel comic book character. Okay. They're actually making a movie about him, which is really cool. And it will actually make the connection between Spider-Man and Venom. But it's a whole other topic anyway.
Okay,
sorry.
Yeah.
Look for Morbius coming out in Marvel. Marvel, you owe me. But yeah, I mean, so you got this Lev Parnas guy, and so, again, I didn't watch the interview, one, because I was busy, but also because, again, I'm not worried about what he says. I'm worried about what he can prove.
Right.
Right? And if he can prove it, right, I don't necessarily need him to say it. Just show me what you got. And the government has, they've got his phones, they've got his tablets, they've got his computers. They've gotten into him, and they're starting to leak that information is starting to come out. And part of me thinks that Nancy Pelosi knew that this was coming down the pike. And that's why she was holding on to the articles of impeachment to give it more time, because now that it's out there and now that people know that the information exists and this guy has talked and the government has this, then this is some information that may be able to be brought into this impeachment trial, which if you have something where you've got a recorded conversation or an email from, you know, Mulvaney or someone in there that's talking about, you know, why exactly they're going after Biden, then all of a sudden that smoking gun that I've been talking about where I say, you know, to this point I haven't seen enough where I'm going to say that's enough to remove a president, right? Like, we all have what we think that he did, but to this point all the testimony has been about feelings and what people think that they think that he meant and thoughts and but there's nothing hard. There's no hard evidence. There's no firsthand accounts of anything, right? Completely opposite of Nixon, right? Where you had recorded tapes and then him trying to destroy those tapes, right? So it's you know, like, right now we have essentially a bunch of, like, hearsay BS, and to me that is not enough to remove a president based on how people think and feel. But once you can prove to me and start to put an actual solid case with documentation and not just interpreted meaning, now things are a little bit different. And so if Lev Parnas has that, then all of a sudden the smoking gun comes into play. And then John Bolton came out and said, listen, if they subpoena me, I'll testify. But even that with me, I'm weary of it because, again, John Bolton is a guy who had a lot of access to the president and had a number of firsthand conversations with him. He's a guy that, you know, was in the Bush administration. He worked for Breitbart. He's always had access. So he's got plenty of information. But my issue with John Bolton is John Bolton is looking out for John Bolton. And so John Bolton coming out and saying that he'll testify if he's subpoenaed, what all that could mean is that he would get up on stage and say, President didn't say any of that. Or he didn't say it to me. I didn't hear it directly. He dances around it. Maybe he knows something. Maybe he doesn't. But it's an opportunity for him to show the president that he's being loyal so he's able to maintain the access that he has or regain the trust of the president so he can regain that access. And then that allows him to continue to go around on the news circuit and have some value for your conservative outlets. And he can say, well, I work for the president, and I know the president trusts me. And so, you know, people believe whatever garbage he's throwing out there, you know, in the name of Trump.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Bolton, so if I understand things correctly, in order for a witness to be called, that the witness needs to be presented, and they need a simple majority of senators to say, yes, we want to call this witness, correct?
Yes. So I mean, but we haven't even gotten to the point of if they've decided that there will be witnesses.
Well, I think, isn't that how it plays out?
Before you get to that point, there has to be an agreement that there will be, like, you can bring witnesses forward, right? Like, you have to have an agreement that you're going to bring the witness, and then once you have the witnesses, you have to vote on which witnesses there will be. Okay. So it's a multi-layered process.
All right, but so the big stink I've been hearing, and this has been mostly through mainstream media, is that Democrats are saying, we want Mulvaney, we want Bolton, you know, we want these guys to testify. And the response from Republicans has been, then we want Hunter Biden and we want Adam Schiff and whatever. And Adam Schiff is a bit different because he's one of the managers of the House's case. So I don't know if his testimony is really practical, for lack of a better word. But as far as Hunter Biden, I don't think he's a fact witness to this whole event. But fine, put him up there.
Yeah, put him up there. Right.
What do you
care? Okay, like, and here's the deal with Hunter Biden. He's going to be a terrible witness. Right? Sure. Like, he's going to be a terrible witness. What? Dude's a fucking moron. Like, he did a 2020 special or whatever he did a few months back, and he's a train wreck. But you know what? It doesn't change the fact of what the president was trying to do. You get Hunter Biden, and he goes up there and says, yeah, I started talking to these Ukrainian dudes, and... you know, they said, you know, I could have this job and, you know, I didn't have to do much and they were giving me a lot of money, so it was totally cool. And it's just like, okay.
That was part Eric Cartman, part...
Whatever. And so, so the point is that there's nothing that Hunter Biden can say. And now, if Hunter Biden goes up there and says, well, yeah, I was doing this, like, and just deliberately, he would have to go in with the intention of saying, fuck my dad, I don't like him, and go in there and say that he was doing it for political reasons, to curry favor with the Ukrainians, and then he was asking his dad for favors while he was in the White House. Like, that's the sort of stuff that he would have to say. I don't believe that that was the case at all. And so, yes, he's going to be a terrible witness, but you throw him out there, and then you point out, like...
And none of this is relevant
to this impeachment. Right, and none of it's relevant to this impeachment and why the president was trying to out Joe and Hunter Biden. And actually, because putting him up there... could, in theory, could hurt Trump even more, right? Because it's just like, this guy is a buffoon, right? Like, so what exactly, like, why exactly, right. What was the point of all this? This guy is a fucking moron. You didn't know that before using government resources to deal with this? Like, what are you doing?
I agree. It could very well backfire. And for Democrats, just, again, give it up. Fine.
Right.
Tit for tat. Even if it did hurt Joe Biden, he is not the nominee yet.
He's not the nominee, so, and it's not the point of this particular thing. Like, right. Like, what's more important, that you protect Joe Biden or that you get Trump on this particular thing that you are saying that he did, right? Like, yeah. So you use everything against him. Fuck Joe Biden. You're going to have to sacrifice him, right? You're going to have to give something up. And I just, and again, it's my frustration. I've been very frustrated with the Democratic Party, their leadership, their strategy, their thought process since... you know, since 2014-15.
Right.
When we knew Obama was gone because he was done, you know, he had termed out, and just you know, kind of how they've, you know, they celebrated things before, you know, before they had won them. And then when they lost them, they tried to, you know, they tried to justify it by saying, well, we almost won and we almost did this. Mm-hmm. And now that you have a situation where they're, you know, they have some power in Congress and they're in this situation where they're trying to back Trump into a corner, they're, again, they're not thinking about this. They're not thinking about the long game. They're not thinking about the most effective way to achieve the result that it, that, that they're actually looking for. And it's just, it's horrible to watch from the sideline knowing how they're fucking this up.
Well, so where do you come down on the Nancy, on how Nancy Pelosi has been handling this?
Mixed.
Okay.
But because initially, it just, it didn't make sense, right? Like, so she's just holding up, like, so we make this big push, you know, to have the congressional inquiry and the, and to get the articles of impeachment, then she holds on to them. Holding on to him for a week, maybe two, just to push the president's buttons, okay, fine, but let's get on with it, because you can't make, because it doesn't, the optics of, well, maybe I just won't deliver him and we'll just have him, right? Like, that, the optics of that is terrible, and again, hurts you in the eyes of the independent voter. If you're worried, like, because if you don't submit the articles, then there's, like, you already are at a 0.001% of getting Donald Trump removed from office. And if you don't deliver the articles, you're at a 0%. Yep. No chance. Right? Like, so, okay, what's the point of what you're doing? And so, looking at it, that's why I believe she had to have some inclination that the stuff with Lev Parnas and some of the other information that's starting to trickle out that is looking more and more incriminating towards Trump still isn't the silver bullet that, you know, that really takes him out and gives you enough to say, yes, you have to remove him from office, but you're getting more and more information. So I believe that she either had a direct line of knowledge that it was coming, or she had enough to know, let's hold on to this.
So she was on Bill Maher's show last night. She was his opening guest, and he asked her that question as whether or not she knew it was coming, and she basically coyly said, I didn't know specifics, but I knew there was a lot out there. I'm kind of in your camp that I think she knew a lot more than she's letting on. When she was talking...
I mean, she's been around D.C. and this game for a long time.
She knows the game.
So, I'm not, like, I believe her. I think that you're right that she's, you know, playing, she's kind of playing coy here. But she's really entrenched in D.C., so the idea that she didn't know or that someone wouldn't leak that to her, I find it hard to believe
if it didn't happen. So when she was giving her speech after delivering the articles of impeachment, she multiple times said things like, the Senate can't undo impeachment. Impeachment is forever. And it seemed to me like she was clearly just twisting the knife in Trump. I mean, just poking him with a stick and aggravating him. And any doubts I had about that were cleared up yesterday when she repeated it in exactly the same way with a smug smile this time, saying, yeah, you can't undo this. She's clearly found a way to get under Trump's skin. And whether you consider that a skill or not, he seems to have a harder time shaking off attacks and moves by her than he does for essentially anyone else.
Well, because she does it very indirectly, but she's very cunning.
She's
probably the right person to have in that position. I wasn't a fan of her before. I'm still not a huge fan, but I will admit strategically she's the right person in that seat. I don't see anyone else in the Democratic Party who would have the patience, the resolve, the you know, ability to kind of look at all their resources and use them to their advantage. So, yeah, she's the right person for the job. And I think I did have concerns that maybe the idea of just being more petty than Donald Trump was her main goal. But then all of a sudden you start to see more information come out and you say, okay, now I get it. You know, the optics weren't good, but I think she had to do a cost-benefit analysis and say, the optics aren't good now, but as the information comes out, people will forget that I held on to it for three weeks, and they'll be blind, you know, they'll be obsessed with the information that's come out, this Lev Parnas guy, he's going to do an interview, and then you have the documents, and people are going to dig into that, and that's what people will focus on, and no one will care about the time that she held on to it. And she's exactly right, right? Like, no one's talking about, really, that gap in time.
Right.
And the other part of it, too, was that with Clinton, there was a similar time frame between the articles of impeachment, you know, between the close of the inquiry and the handing down of the articles of impeachment and the beginning of the actual Senate trial, right? If you look at the if you look at the amount of time between the two things happening, right, like the end of the inquiry and when the Senate trial started, the difference is really like 3 or 4 days at this point, right? Like, so it seems like a long time, and everybody was impatient, and, you know, Lindsey Graham was out there talking about, well, if they're not going to do it, then we're just going to have a trial without the articles of impeachment, right? Like, Lindsey Graham, what the fuck are you talking about? You cannot have a fucking Senate, like, you just, it's mechanically not possible to have a trial if you don't have, so you're going to sit there and have a trial, right, a Senate trial of your president without articles of impeachment. So that's literally saying, like, if you're a criminal, that's like saying, you know what, I haven't been charged with the crime, but take me to trial, and we're going to decide my guilt or innocence on a thing that I have not been charged yet. Let's just do it. Fuck it. It's insane. I mean, in
the arrest warrant is still sitting on someone's desk.
Right, like, but exactly. You know, I mean, like, it goes to show, again, kind of, how ridiculous this has all become, in, you know, the idea of kind of like a political circus and a spectacle of just people saying ridiculous things. You know, I mean, like, just, oh, well, you know what, we'll just have the Senate trial without your articles of impeachment. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like, right.
I think you're
going to take my ball and go home. So a big part of this, according to a lot of the folks I've been listening to, is that there is still time for these guys to get attacked in a primary from their own party prior to the November election.
Okay.
And the fact that none of these guys have the guts to stand up and say, you know what, we should take this constitutional duty seriously, and we need to have witnesses. You can't really have a trial if you're not going to, you know, if you're just going to look at pieces of paper. So let's do this right. None of them want to do that, and a lot of the speculation is they don't want to get undercut by their own party prior to you know, the November election's coming up. If that's true, which I suspect it largely is, that is exactly what's wrong with our system, like I was saying at the start of the show. Just none of these guys are doing what their duty tells them they should do. Instead, they're just, well, my re-election is really going to hinge on me saying that Hunter Biden must testify, so I'm going to do that. And again, I'd give up Hunter Biden in a second.
Well,
I think chicken shit politics is all I'm saying.
Maybe, but again, I have a close friend that I went to school with, which school I won't say, but that person works in the State Department.
Okay.
And they're very tied in to, like, everything that's happening in D.C. And there's multiple lines of thought, but on the Republican side, there's not a lot being said publicly from a majority of your senators on where they are kind of mentally with all of this, right? And they're to a degree, they're smart to do it for the reason that you said. Like, listen, yeah, there are primaries, right? And the idea, and part of the problem is that because of Donald Trump and because of social media, everyone is expecting everyone to come out. You need to tell me all the things that you're thinking and all your strategy. I want all of it plastered in my face right now, right? You need to go on CNN and you need to tell me your stance on X, Y, and Z, and I want it all laid out in bullet points. And if you don't do it, then you're going to do the opposite of what I want you to do, and so I'm going to condemn you for it, right? Like, there's a lot of that going on. And so a lot of people are actually playing it smart. Like, there's no reason for them to tell us anything right now. There's no reason for them to come out. And the few people that have come out, like, okay, yeah, Mitch McConnell is going to come out and say, yeah, well, I don't care what happens, what information is presented. I mean, I think the president is innocent, right? Like, he's already come out and he said it. And we know where Lindsey Graham's self is. I'm going to refrain.
Yeah, well, do we? Because he flip-flops more.
He's so ridiculous. We know that he's a sycophant for the president, period. Right?
When he used to be one of his antagonists. I mean, this guy's flip-flopped more.
All I can go with is what I have right now.
Right.
And all I know is that for the last 6 months, he has been on a he's been on his knees for President Trump. So I have to assume that's where he is until I hear him flip again.
I think since John McCain died, he's been a total sycophant.
Right, like he's just had no he's had no ability to be objective about anything. You know, I mean, what's funny is even when before we had killed Soleimani, you know, he would question the president's thoughts with Iran or whatever, and then he would go back and immediately counter himself. You know, so I'm not worried about Lindsey Graham. He's already he just exists out there, old man screaming into the wind. But I think you have a few people on both sides, Republican and Democrat, that love the media attention, that love the media spotlight, that the media knows that they can go to and they're going to get that hot, you know, that quick statement, that hot statement. It may make sense, it may not make sense. You know, they may, if it's a Democrat, they're going to take their digs at Trump and talk about how unethical he is and racist and everything else. If it's a Republican, they're going to talk about everything being a scam and how this is all a waste of time and the taxpayers' money and blah, 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 blah. Right? There's about 7 to 10 people combined on both sides that's what you're going to get. Everybody else, nothing. Right? And that's probably the way to play it. Right? I mean, I don't think it's fair to necessarily, you know, attack them. We're making a lot of assumptions, but we don't have anything. Now, listen, what we have is a track record of Trump's done a lot of shit, and we haven't heard anything from any of you to really counter what he's done, and you have the opportunity because you're in the Senate, and this is your fucking job. Right? But in this particular instance, I'm willing to say that maybe there are a few out there who, if they see the right thing over the course of this trial, they would be willing to vote against Trump. Now, part of it is timing, but the other part is that they're willing to actually look and say, listen, he's done enough to show us that we may not be able to trust him. He's lied enough, you know, he's put enough BS out there that if we see the right thing during the course of this trial, then we would be willing to vote to remove him, even if we know it won't be enough to remove him from office. Right, like, but okay. But I think you have to be fair and give them that opportunity to do it. Now, I think that a lot of people are going to set the bar high in terms of what they need to see, and I think that's the right thing to do. My bar is high. I don't like Trump. I don't think he's a good leader. I think he's very dangerous for our republic. I think he's dangerous for our democracy. But at the same time, he was duly elected. No, he didn't win the popular vote, but he did. He did win the Electoral College, and that's the system that we have. So he won it. And so he is in that position, and I think ultimately the best way to get him out of that position is to vote him out. Now, that being said, if I see enough hard evidence, I need a fucking smoking gun. I need direct proof that he was using his office to directly impact the political election in his favor. We can all say we know that's what he was doing. We think that's what he was doing. I feel like what he was doing. All of that. I need proof of it. Hard proof. It's a high bar, and if you can't present it to me, then I'm sorry, I can't remove a president based off your feelings. Not you, but your general. I understand.
Yeah. So let me ask this, you know, in all sincerity. If John Bolton testifies and gets up there and says that everything that Lev Parnas says is accurate, that we knew what the president knew what we were doing it on his behalf, and we were using our influence, financial influence, to force the president of Ukraine to release a statement saying we're investigating the Bidens because they're corrupt. If John Bolton testifies to that in front of the Senate, would that be enough for you?
Yeah, I mean, if he says it the right way, yeah. Okay. If he says it and he puts that out there and says this is, and you know, to summarize, this was about politics. This was about an election. This was about taking out, a competitor. You know, a person that he saw as a threat politically, then yeah, that's enough.
Okay.
Right? And that's enough. And the reason why is because, and again, going back to the Federalist Papers, number 65, Alexander Hamilton, you know, where you do something to directly impact the public trust, right? You violate the public trust, right? You are in public office, you were put there by the people, and then you do something, right? You do something focused on you. Right, using and manipulating the trust that the people put in you in that office. And by going out and saying, I'm going to take this guy out, right? I'm gonna use my power, my authority that the people vested in me to take this person out who the people may like him more than me. So if that's the case, I'm gonna remove him from the equation, right? Then you shouldn't be using your power to do that. Right? Like, if you think that you're that much better of a person to run the country, then you face him in an election. You don't try to have him taken out
by a foreign government.
On false pretenses by a foreign government. Not what your power is supposed to be used for. But I need proof of that and not just the way people feel about it.
Understood. I agree. And my big thing is, I want, and you've been saying this for weeks now, but I'm now very excited to see if and when John Bolton testifies, because yeah. I didn't think it was a possibility until this week.
Right, I think, again, he's the key, he's the linchpin, because we know the amount of access he had to the president. We know that they had many conversations directly to, you know, they had many firsthand conversations. But that being said, I also don't trust John Bolton. I don't trust him. He's already proven to be very worried about his post-political career with his book and his website and all this other stuff. So, you know, John Bolton is looking out for him. So while I think he's a critical piece, I don't necessarily trust that there's a lot of people who will be, one way or another, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be disappointed in what John Bolton says if and when he testifies.
The thing that overrides what you just said in my mind is, when he's testifying in front of the Senate, he's under oath, and if he lies, he's facing criminal charges.
Got to be able to prove he's lying.
True. And the question is, what do they have? Like, you mentioned,
and so who's like, right? Like, so if he lies in favor of the president, then a majority of the people in the Senate, literally, and the president and his administration, they're not going to be digging to figure out if he's lying or telling the truth. And the Democrats already can't get information out of the Republican and the White House and the administration. So it's going to be hard to prove it. Right, there's not many people on the Democratic side who have any sort of access to the president to be able to begin to figure out if John Bolton lies, or if he's going to lie, or if he's lying when he does testify. So if I'm John Bolton and I'm just going to do this to curry favor with the president, you know, I mean, just to get to testify like people are asking me to do, but at the same time to stay in the president's good graces, then yeah, I'll get up there and not tell the whole truth, or fudge, you know, kind of fudge it a little bit, or you know, get up there and say a whole bunch of nothing. I mean, there's plenty of politicians that we've seen that will put themselves in that situation. They'll talk in circles so they don't have to necessarily lie, but they don't say anything, right? Like, right. So it's important that he testifies, but only if he's going to be 100% truthful. And if he's not, then it's going to be a waste of fucking time.
We will see. We will see. Did you watch the Democratic debate, the final Democratic Mm-mm. debate? Okay. You used your time more wisely than I did. By the time people will be listening to this, that's going to be three news cycles old. I don't want to go through a blow by blow. But the big deal was the whole exchange between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and whether the story broke that Bernie Sanders allegedly said something to the effect of a woman can't win the 2020 presidential election. At the debate, the moderator asked Bernie Sanders, did you say that? He said no. The next question was, Senator Warren, when he said that, what was your response? And she replied, I disagreed. So, first of all, I don't believe for a second that in context, Bernie Sanders said a woman can't win a presidential election. Just knowing what I know about Bernie Sanders, that does not strike me as something he would say. Could he have said words that were taken that way? Sure. I mean, he could have said something that could be interpreted that way, but I don't see Bernie Sanders as a misogynist who says women can't win. I just don't.
I don't care, but I think he could have said it. I think I actually probably think he did say it. Bernie Sanders does not strike me as the type to mince words, and Elizabeth Warren is a lot of things, but I mean, I think a lot of things can be true at once. I think he probably said it. Now, could it have been taken out of context? Sure. Could Elizabeth Warren have taken it out of context intentionally because of the position she was in, because she hadn't really made a splash? She was starting to kind of go backwards. in the polls, and she needed a reason to kind of rev things up, especially right before a debate, and we're a couple weeks out from Iowa. Absolutely.
All right, I think she definitely played that.
So she has plenty of, she's got plenty of reason to manipulate what he said, but at the same time, I've heard Bernie Sanders speak, not only in debates, but it, you know, in speeches, town halls, everything else. He doesn't really mince words. He's a little rough around the edges, and I could easily see him saying that in this day and age, given the, you know, because of Trump and the type of people that like Trump, and where the Democratic Party is, that, you know, they had a lot of animosity towards Hillary. It's going to be hard for a woman to win, and I don't see her winning in this election cycle. I could see him saying that. You know, I mean, I could see him saying
that's kind of what I'm saying. Those,
right.
They can interpret that either way, I guess.
Right, but. And the question is, does it matter? I mean, if that's how he said it, that's how he said it, and is it right or wrong? I don't know. But I think it doesn't matter. And here's the thing, because there's, what's happening in these debates isn't moving people really off their position. Joe Biden is still leading by a pretty decent amount, with most of your Democratic demographics, right? I mean, you've got some people that have kind of, you know, jockeyed back and forth, and Bernie has his distinct group, and Elizabeth Warren has her followers, and Yang, and you know, and Tulsi, and whoever else is still in there, and Amy Klobuchar, but ultimately, I mean, Biden is the front runner by a decent amount. Now, whether he should be or not, that's a whole different thing, but the polls are what they are, and the numbers are what they are, and I've got a couple good sources that I use for that information, like Nate Silver and 538, probably the most trusted source of being able to look at the data and actually kind of pull it apart and put it back together in a way that seems objective and makes sense, right? And then there's one other that I found, but so I tend to go with those. And I don't trust polls a whole lot, but that's really the only metric that you have for this. So you have to keep it into account. So that's where we are. But we haven't had anything happen yet. Iowa hasn't even happened yet.
Right.
So when that does, when people go into the booth, no one's going to sit there and say, oh, you remember that thing between Warren and Bernie Sanders? Or you remember that time when this person said that on the debate stage and all this other stuff? Like that's not how people vote. That's not how you vote. That's not how anybody votes. They don't go in thinking about the buzzwords that were said during the debate, right? They think about policies. They think about how will this ultimately impact me, this person, voting for this person. Or they think, I've been in love with this person from day one. I saw them on MSNBC or I saw them on Fox News and they blew my mind. There's nothing that they could say or do that will change my mind from that. I don't even care about policies. I just think they look good. They sound good when they talk and that's who I'm going to vote for. There's a lot of people who saw Barack Obama and that was their thought process. It wasn't about his policies. They couldn't fucking tell you what his policies were. All they said was hope and change and he's black and he looks good and I love the way he speaks. I'm voting for him, right? There are a lot of people who saw Bill Clinton. He plays a saxophone. I saw it on Arsenio Hall. He's down with black people. This guy's cool. I like him. I'm going to vote for him. Period. Didn't know his policies. Didn't understand his policies. Didn't really give a shit about his policies. Didn't care about whatever the bullshit he had going on with Whitewater and all that shit in Arkansas. All they knew is that the guy looked good in a suit. His wife was moderately attractive. He had charisma, so they voted for him. They don't care about these. These debates aren't doing anything. They're not moving people. You see small little spikes and jumps and things like that, but ultimately all that shit gets smoothed out and people fall back in the line.
So I think that what's going to determine Iowa is largely going to be ground game.
Yes.
Who can get out there and meet with people, because Iowa is the focus of our political, you know, landscape for the next couple weeks, and then Iowa becomes Iowa again, and yep, no one really cares. So getting out and you know, feet on the ground, and is there a 1 week difference between Iowa and New Hampshire?
I think it's so. 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah. So a lot of these candidates are going back and forth between Iowa and New Hampshire right now, and that's all they're doing. And Andrew Yang was on Bill Maher's show yesterday also, and he was saying he's doing 6 events a day in Iowa and 6 events a day in New Hampshire. It'll be interesting to me to see if someone from the left off the debate stage group jumps up in Iowa and or New Hampshire. I don't know that it'll happen.
Well, there's not. I mean, there's not a lot left. I mean, you have
Tulsi and Yang are really the two.
Tulsi, Yang, Bloomberg, and Steyer. Right, like those are the ones who aren't going to be on the debate stage. And Steyer was on the debate stage, right? But those are the ones who, you know, Bloomberg and Steyer jumped in late. Yang and Tulsi aren't quite there in terms of the way their donations and all that other stuff is happening, but they're still hanging around. You know, Cory Booker pulled out and a few other people pulled out, and Amy Klobuchar is still there.
Right. And by the way, now, she's never not looked good in the debate.
Right, and the thing is, I mean, again, Amy Klobuchar is very similar to Kamala Harris with the background in terms of being a prosecutor and things like that. And, you know, again, I liked Kamala Harris. She was my number one pick going into all of this. Her downfall ultimately was the way her campaign was run, and I didn't think that she presented well in the debates. And, again, I'm saying that the debates don't matter, and they don't, but to a degree, they did for her. And I think it was unfair because she was a woman of color. She was attacked relentlessly by the media, supposedly by, you know, the left media, you know, the left mainstream media that is all liberal. Well, they really didn't like Kamala Harris, and they went after her. But I think ultimately Kamala Harris was her own downfall with, again, the way she had her campaign ran, who she trusted to run that campaign, and the fact that I don't believe that she stayed true to herself in these instances where the spotlight was on her. That being said, Amy Klobuchar has been pretty steady. Right now, sure. Early on in her campaign, Amy Klobuchar, it came out that a lot of her staffers left because she's really hard on people, right? Like, she just, like, if either do your job or get out, she yells at people, and that's not a surprise. Like, she's, you know, I mean, she's a hard drive, like, she's a female prosecutor. That means she's hard driving, she's hard charging, she's probably really demanding, and, you know, you got a lot of soft millennials out there. You yell at them, then they want to fucking sue you, so I could see where that wouldn't work. But that being said, she's steady, she's been consistent, and, you know, before the show we didn't talk about this, but I think that she's a person who could surprise people coming out of Iowa. If she's doing the ground game thing right, people could say, listen, I don't know about Biden, I don't know if I trust him, this guy is, he seems like a bumbling idiot, you know, I don't like Bernie, he's too far, this and that, Elizabeth Warren, she's just, you know, whatever, Pocahontas. And then, so maybe they settle on an Amy Klobuchar, right? Like, they can get comfortable with her. She ends up coming in, even if Amy Klobuchar comes in third, right?
Oh, that'd be
that's
a huge victory
that's
for
a
her.
Huge victory for her, and that gives her momentum. And we've seen people do it. We've seen Barack Obama do it. We've seen Bill Clinton do it. We've seen Tom Kerry do it, or John Kerry. No, sorry. We've seen John Kerry do it. So there are people, like, if you can come in the top three in Iowa and carry, that's momentum, and carry that into New Hampshire. Well, all of a sudden, now you got a race, and now you got a game, and now you can weed people out, right? You can push, like, you, sure. Now, because going into New Hampshire, people know your name, right? Like, oh, this person came in third in Iowa, whoa, and they start to pay attention, you get a little momentum, and then you come in second in New Hampshire, right? And then that gives you an opportunity, now you're going to South Carolina with a shit ton of momentum, and all of a sudden, now, it's Amy Klobuchar and Joe Biden. And listen, that's a matchup Joe Biden does not want. Right, because all he has, he's like, oh, well, I got this record. I've been in the, you know, I've been around for 30 years, and I was vice president. But you're also touchy-feely, creepy, and you really say the wrong thing all the time.
Yeah.
Right, and she's a woman who doesn't trip over her words. She's very sharp, and she's very bright. So she could easily move into this conversation really, really quickly. Not to say that some of these other people can't, but I think it's going to be really hard for Yang and Gabbard. But Klobuchar is hanging around enough to where she's probably the one person out of Steyer, Bloomberg, and the other two we just mentioned.
They
she's
also
the
ran
one
too.
Who could, you know, who could jump in.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with any of that. It'll be interesting to see. I don't have the date in front of me, but it's like 2 or 3 weeks away for the Iowa caucus, and I'll be very curious to see how that all shakes out. Like I said, we end up on the same page here that ground game is going to mean everything. There's a lot of
shaking
momentum,
hands,
a lot
and
of
kissing babies, man.
Yep.
Got to do a lot of it.
Yep.
You know, better have your hand sanitizer and your Zycam ready.
All right. So, congratulations on not wasting the 2 hours that I spent on my couch with a glass of whiskey in my hand watching that shit show. You brought something to my attention that I find very interesting, disconcerting, actually, and that is the state of Virginia is enacting a bunch of gun legislation, most of which I find to be unproductive.
Right. And I think we're in the same boat, right? Like, I mean, so they're going to limit purchases to one gun per month. Okay.
Which I find ridiculous.
Limit handgun purchases to one per month. Okay. It's ridiculous. What does it solve? Nothing, but okay, fine. All right. I mean, you know, it prevents the, you know, like if you're worried about the homegrown terrorists stockpiling guns quickly, okay, it does help with that. But at the same time, a lot of these people, what we found are that they're actually really methodical. And these plans, like they put time, I mean, months, whether it's the people in San Bernardino or it's, you know, the guy in Las Vegas, like that guy had built that stockpile right. over years. So this doesn't stop that. Either of those instances. Background checks. We already have background checks, right? I mean, like...
What they don't have is background checks when an individual sells to an individual. And that is actually probably a good thing if you can control it.
But the problem is that you can't control it.
I've bought guns in parking lots. Okay. Not yeah. Well, I mean, it was legal.
Right.
I mean, one in particular, I was in a gun store in South Carolina... Guy was trying to sell a handgun. The gun store was offering him a rock-bottom low price. I waited for the guy to walk out of the store, followed him out, and said, hey, you wanted this much? I'll give you that much. We met in a parking lot and exchanged cash for a firearm.
Okay.
It was perfectly legal at the time.
Right. And here's the problem. That being said, when you're driving down the street and you see people, when you see someone buying a gun in a parking lot... Right, I mean, maybe down south, maybe in a place like Texas, or maybe it's more common. But I've never seen, people have enough common sense where this is not something that you're going to be able to track, right? I mean, because you're not going to there's no way for law enforcement to know, right?
Right.
Like if I take my gun, I put it in a case, and I drive it over to your house. I come inside. You give me money, I give you the gun, I leave. There's no way for anyone to track that, right? I mean, there's not. Like, guns have serial numbers, fine, but I'm not registering it anywhere, right? Like, I'm not alerting the government.
In some states, you do have to register every handgun.
Yeah.
And like, New York, you could not do what you just described because
right,
my permit would have the handgun with serial number on it. And...
Again, the government that's would New know. York, but I mean,
right,
that's not
right.
a majority of the states.
Right.
So, I mean, like, that's, and if you have more states going towards that, okay, that's one thing. And I'm not necessarily against that, but you have to worry about, you know, so the other laws, so you've got the limit to purchase of one handgun per month, you've got background checks, you know, allow local government to ban in parks and public places. Okay. You know why that's dumb? Because most places where mass shootings happen, guns are illegal.
Right. School.
So,
I mean, every school shooting.
Right. Every school shooting, guns are illegal. Again, San Bernardino, the guns were illegal in the building. The Pulse nightclub, a gun wasn't
right.
supposed to be there. Right? Like, so the law was there, but yet the person with the gun was still there. This is baffling to me. How could this possibly be?
I'm willing to murder people in cold blood, but I'm not willing to violate crossing this imaginary line.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you can put it out there because for some reason it'll make really stupid people feel better, but I hope that you're smart enough to know that law isn't stopping anything. Right? I mean, like, in all these laws, like, so, and again, my question is, what gun violence are we really, really worried about, right? Like, you're clearly not worried about the gun violence that happens in the inner city, because the gun violence that happens in the inner city, none of these laws are going to help. Not one bit, right?
Right.
Like, no one in the hood is going and buying guns legally, right? They're buying them all illegally, right? The other question you have to ask is, where are they getting them? And a lot of times, they're either getting them from fucking shady-ass cops who are taking them out of evidence lockers, right? Or they're getting them from fucking gun runners. Right, like so, like we've got problems, or they're stealing them from people's houses, you know, breaking into gun stores, like literally just driving cars into gun stores. I have a buddy who's in the ATF, and he was just like, "Listen, these kids stole a car, drove it into a gun shop, stole the guns, and took off." You know, I mean,
sure.
So I mean, like either way, they're not obtaining guns legally, right?
Right.
So putting in, well, we gotta have a background check, doesn't stop what happens in the inner city. So again, that's where gun violence is most prevalent. If you don't live in an inner city, the chances of you being a victim of a gun crime are almost fucking zero, Right? Like, so at that point, so what violence are we worried about? We're worried about the most outrageous, which is school shootings. We're worried about, you know, mass shootings and things like that. And while they're put out on the media, right, if you do the total math, right, when you really look at it, the way these things are going down and the things that affect our sensibilities the most, they happen really, really infrequently. Right? Like, so you're worried about the most infrequent things, and you're putting in these things, these laws that hurt people that are law-abiding normal citizens, which is the majority of your gun owners. There's over 300, there's over 600 million guns out there, right? And there's 300 million people in the United States, and of those 300 million people, right, like 200 million of them are the only ones who are allowed to have guns, and of those 200 million, probably 20 million actually have guns, right? So you've got a ton of guns out there. You don't have a ton of people using them. So making these restrictions out, putting these laws and these restrictions in place, it doesn't make sense.
Well, one other thing I believe I read in the article about this law in Virginia is it was going to ban the sale and possession of assault rifles. And that's always a catchphrase. And for those who don't remember, and most people probably won't, in, I want to say, 1994, the Clinton administration implemented the Clinton assault rifle ban. So they defined an assault rifle, and they said, you know, an assault rifle is a gun that has, X number of these particular features. And then immediately gun manufacturers started making guns that skirted the law. You know, said it, you know, there's always ways around it. And to say, well, you can't have something that you already own, that's what my biggest problem with this is. All my hardcore Second Amendment friends that tell me the government's coming after your guns, and I say bullshit, they never have, they never will.
They're making you look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And
that's not the word I was going to choose, but
but I mean, it's true. No, it's, and so here's the other part. Like, I mean, going back to the ban on assault style rifles, right?
Right.
So that's a new thing. It's not just assault rifles; it's assault style rifles.
Right.
Right. Like, so it's how the weapon looks. Because, oh, this looks big, bad, and scary. So if we, you know, and what's interesting is, and again, I think you've made this point, and you know, any person that knows anything a decent amount about guns can say, listen, all right, so you want to get rid of AR-15s because of the way that they look. Now, yes, AR-15s are designed to be really effective killing machines, mm-hmm. right? That is why that is what they are designed for. But a 9mm is also designed to be a really effective killing machine, right? Then people say, oh, well, you can kill more people with an AR-15 than you can with a 9mm. That's fine, but you can also kill a fuckload of people with a 9mm. I'm sorry,
you're right. Yeah, no.
And so the other aspect of it is, all right, like, okay, fine. Like, you don't want me to have an AR-15 because, again, it's got a removable clip and scope sight, all the things, all the add-ons and all that fun stuff. Well, okay. But there are hunting rifles out there that use, you know, similar ammunition that can cause just as much damage over the same distance, you know, to the same number of people, that it just doesn't look as scary, right? I mean, there's various sporting rifles out there that don't look like military-style rifles that are still very effective killing machines, right? So what they're going to say is you can have those type of rifles, but you can't have the scary military-style looking ones, because that will make some mom in the suburbs feel better about some shit that has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with her, right? I mean, right. It's just... The whole argument of itself, like, I'm looking at a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald right now, which you have hanging, and can you talk about the gun that he has in his hand right now?
I can.
Talk about it.
It is a piece of shit. It's okay. An Italian-made Carcano. In those days, they were very readily available. It's a 6.5mm bolt-action rifle. I mean, it was a military rifle in its time, but its time was the 1930s.
Fine.
What else do you want to know about it?
Well, I mean, if someone was really effective at using it, how many people could they kill in that short amount of time?
That's a very poor choice. It's a clunky, unreliable piece of shit.
Okay, but I'm just saying. Let's just say you caught it on a good day. Could you kill multiple people with the gun?
You could, yeah.
Okay.
But not as effectively as you could with an AR. Or an automatic rifle.
Understood, right?
Or an AR-15.
I mean, there's a lot of different ARs out there that are more effective. Some are more effective than others, and some are more reliable than others. The point is that guns are guns. They're designed to kill.
Yeah.
Right? It's not about hunting, right? The Second Amendment doesn't say anything about hunting. It's not about hunting.
Right.
Right? It's the right to bear arms and to protect yourself against a tyrannical government, and just to protect yourself in general, right? Like, that's a short and sweet version of what's in there, right? Now, people are saying... oh, well, the government's got bigger and badder guns. So...
They do.
Right? Like, I mean, and they do. They have they do in some instances, right? But, I mean, what do police complain about when, like, someone has an AR-15 and they're facing a person, like, we're outgunned, right? Because, you know, most police officers just carry a handgun. So, I mean, there's an argument about it. But the main thing is once you get into the military and the National Guard and all that sort of stuff, yes, the average citizen is going to be outgunned by them. But... That still shouldn't. That still doesn't mean, well, because they have bigger and badder guns than me, I'm just gonna just give up everything. Like I choose to defend myself against all y'all, and I'm just pointing to everybody right. else out there. However, I want to fucking do it, right? So short of me having a tank, you know, or a rocket launcher,
right?
Then give me the most effective weapon that I can to protect myself, my family against. Shady people, because you can't sit here and tell me, and I've made this argument a million times, you can't sit here and tell me as a black man that the police are coming to get me and they're out to attack me and that they're not there to protect and serve and they're not doing their job and they're not protecting and serving people, that they're abusing their power and all these other things, and then say, oh, by the way, you are also the first person we want to give up your way to defend yourself, right? Those two things cannot coexist.
I understand. The only thing that I've said that's pissed people off in the past about ARs is just acknowledge that you don't have this thing for any other reason than it's a weapon designed to kill people, and that I've always said that I have no problem giving up magazines over a certain size. I said 10 rounds. People have argued that we'll do nothing and fine, whatever. I'm just fine with those two statements, and I don't like bullshit arguments when people say that I've got my AR-15 because I like coyote hunting from helicopters or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Let's be honest, right? Yeah. I mean, like, the weapons are designed to kill, yep. right? The weapons are designed to kill. I want, like, if someone is coming to kill me, then I want the most effective tool that I can get my hands on to protect myself and my family.
Yep.
Now, people say, well, you should either be a handgun or a shotgun. That's, okay, fine, that's but it's subjective, right? Like, I mean, because... One police military trained guy versus another police and military trained guy, they can have two different opinions on that same topic, right? And I've seen it and I've heard it, right? Like, there's a person that we used to talk to who says, all you need is a shotgun, right? There's another person I know, multiple tours, is a police officer, says, fuck that, have an AR, have a 9, and have a shotgun. Have all three, because you never know what you might be up against. Well... I don't do anything shady enough to warrant that many people coming after me, but you never know. So, I've got two out of the three, you know?
Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, anyway, what's going on in Virginia, but, so, they're doing that, they're introducing these laws, the bills haven't been passed yet, there's a chance that they could go into, they could get passed next week. And so there's a rally that, you know, Second Amendment people are going to, and their concerns about what this rally will do. Will it be another Charlottesville? Will violence break out? Will this be the beginning of the Civil War? All that shit is kind of have been thrown out there, but it's just something to watch for in the news. When you hear about the rally in Virginia, that's kind of the gist of what's going on there. So yeah. It's something to watch.
And I'm like I said, I hate when dumb gun laws make it impossible for me to stay logical in you know, my shut up, the government's not coming after you argument. So
Jim doesn't like to be wrong, folks.
I don't, but when I am, I'll admit it.
Right. So we're coming up on an hour. We're at an hour in a couple minutes. So the last two things we're going to rush just a little bit. So there's something to really watch in Russia. The entire government resigned under Vladimir Putin. Now,
when you say the entire government.
No, I mean every member of the government, like of the what we would call essentially the executive branch here,
okay.
has resigned in Russia, because Vladimir Putin basically said, I want to be president forever, essentially. And so they said, nah, you're kind of a dick. We were hoping that after this term you would be done.
Yeah.
And Vladimir Putin has been in power for over a combined of like 20 years. So...
Even when he wasn't the president, he was the prime minister or whatever, and he might as well have been president.
Right. I mean, so he was the president, then he was the prime minister, and then he became the president again. People thought that he was going to not run again and, you know, respect the Constitution and the term limits that were put in. And now he's trying to change it so that he can stay in power. And so you're seeing the early stages of a power struggle in Russia. I don't know. We don't know enough about it. Like this announcement came out Thursday or Friday that they had all resigned. We don't know the effect of it. Now, listen, Vladimir Putin still has it. Even if they do all resign, he still will have a ton of power. So the interesting thing to see, and this is not a joke, but if people begin to turn up dead, if people are jailed, what sort of happens there? And it could be something that completely destabilizes Russia, or it could be something that kind of ushers in a new era of change, and maybe Russia goes from, you know, meddling in our elections to actually being a partner we can work with. Who knows? But I mean, there's a ton of implications there. We just don't know what the fallout is going to be. So it's something to kind of watch for. And by the time you are listening to this, then maybe we'll have more clarity on what the situation is.
I mean, going against Vladimir Putin has been a serious threat to your health for decades.
Yes.
This is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and like, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, the news report came out, says entire Russian government resigns over Vladimir Putin looking to extend his ability to stay in power. That was the headline. So, I mean, I can't make it any more ridiculous than it already is. Okay. And so the question is how this all plays out. Does he in turn just immediately step down? Is he able to get everybody back to the table and say, all right, fine, I will not push for more power, just let's ride this thing out? Or does Russia go to war with itself? It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and not at all scary. All right, a little more lighthearted stuff, but yeah. The baseball cheating scandal?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that directly impacts us here in Cleveland, because in 2017 or 2018... we played the Houston Astros in the playoffs, and
17, yeah.
And they swept us. They swept us, and it was in three games, and it's kind of like, oh, that sucks. Now, out of that series came this news that they were cheating. They had some guy that, you know, he was kind of a lackey of the owner or something like that, and he was taking pictures and video of what the Indians were doing in their dugout. I think you and I even talked about this, and I think I said, well, it kind of sounds like we're... you know,
sour grapes,
poor losers, crying over spilled milk. The guy got fired, and then that was kind of the end of it. Major League Baseball said that they would look into it, and then I forgot about it. Then it comes out this week that, you know, Major League Baseball, you know, did their investigation. The Astros had been cheating for years using technology and cell phones and video
and banging on a garbage can to
signal, like,
so from high tech to low tech,
right? I mean, like, they're using videos and cameras to analyze and break out and steal signals, and then they're using this low technology to bang in a garbage can to tell things, and it's just like, God, you know, we got the dude at where the Indians at Progressive Field who bangs the drum,
right?
Like, he's at every game. Why have we not been using him all this time?
Maybe we have, first of all.
No, clearly we're not, because we have yet to win a fucking World Series.
There's that.
At least the Astros got a World Series out of this. But the fallout has been baseball found out that they were doing it for a long time. It was really extensive, and the manager and the GM were fired. Other coaches...
and suspended for a year.
Yes, suspended for a year. They were fired... from the Astros, so like you're suspended for a year and you no longer have a job. The guy that the Red Sox had hired, Alex Cora, he got fired.
Carlos Beltran walked away.
I mean, he was hired and then he was basically like let go. So I mean, the fallout from this has been actually massive. And it's interesting to see, are they going to be able to keep their World Series? Because a lot of people are saying they should have lost it. Baseball hasn't gone far enough. I'm not 100% sure baseball is done with levying punishments on this unless they've made a statement that, you know, the people who are responsible have been dealt with, and that's all that they're going to do. I haven't seen that statement yet, so I don't know. But if they haven't made it, I'm curious to see what happens.
Contrast this with the NFL, where the Patriots have been caught cheating multiple times, including using technology to steal information.
Yeah.
And they might lose a fourth-round pick.
I mean, you know, the NFL is like, our oldest kid or our favorite kid or whatever. I mean, a lot of things happen in the NFL that have way more intense consequences in other sports, right? Baseball is a sport that they're very big on tradition and unwritten rules, and the sports writers impact the Hall of Fame so much more, where in the NFL, there's a certain, I think part of it is because the sport is so violent that there's just certain things that we come to accept. Because we accept the violence in the sport, somehow we're willing to be okay with some of the other ancillary things that are less savory about the sport as well. A guy gets busted for, you know, steroids or PED use or drugs or whatever in the NFL. We're kind of like, all right, he's suspended 4 games. And then you kind of forget about it. You don't think about it. Like, Julius Peppers got suspended once for PED use because allegedly he was taking cold medicine. It was really rarely ever mentioned again. And then we all know that he's going to be a Hall of Famer and no one's really going to question
Pat it. Pat and I, right?
Right? I mean, it's just like, I mean, you know, Ray Lewis got caught up in a PED scandal. He's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it just, football is just different in the way that we embrace it. You know, even though Donald Trump tried to insert himself with the whole thing with Colin Kaepernick, and it pissed everybody off for a good, solid year and a half, but ultimately, everybody forgot about it, including him, and now, like, the game is still as strong as it was before. Ratings are up. The league is still making ridiculous amounts of money, and it just doesn't impact it. It just, football is just different.
Yep.
I'm also 100% okay with it. All of it.
Okay.
With the NFL. Like, okay. I'm okay with the NFL. I'm okay with people not getting upset about the guys using drugs. You have the people online who will always bring up, oh, wife beaters and blah, 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 but they're just doing it to be trolls. And I'm also, again, I'm okay with most of the NFL.
The thing, though, that baseball goes nuts is whenever you impact the integrity of the game. And I air quoted that because what the Patriots did that. And the consequences were, in my opinion, minimal. I mean, they suspended Brady for 4 games for the Deflategate thing, whatever. But the fact that they're going to get caught with something again, and all the speculation I've heard is the Patriots are going to lose a middle-round draft pick where the Astros cheated and 2 guys get suspended for a year, fired, 2 other guys get fired. Very, very different. But I do want to say one thing. I've heard a lot of people say, does knowing what pitch is going to get thrown really make it that much easier?
Yes.
Oh, my God, yes.
When you're at that level, I mean at any level, but when you know that it's going to be a fastball coming straight down the middle and you have a sense of where to kind of focus your swing, absolutely. Yes, it makes a difference. If you know it's going to be a curveball, if you know it's going to be a breaking ball, right? Like, it's not going to be coming nearly as fast. You don't, like, you start your swing a little bit slower. You don't have to, you know, you don't put as much power into the swing. Like, all of that sort of stuff. And I wasn't even a great baseball difference. Player.
Yes.
Right? I mean, I played, I was decent, but, I mean, like, for the guys that are really good, especially on that pro level, when they have the ability just to pick up a ball way earlier than the average person, right? A lot of it, too, is out of our control. It's not, like, you can practice as much as you want, but some people just have, you know, just obscene hand-eye coordination and crazy vision. What's his name? From the Red Sox, the great legend.
Ted Williams.
They said Ted Williams, his vision was like 15 over like it was beyond perfect vision. So his ability to see the ball before it left the pitcher's hand, basically, and pick up the laces as they were rotating when it was being pitched. Like, that stuff that if you know what the pitch is, you know what the ball is going to do, and you can adjust your swing, that makes a huge fucking difference for professionals. So, yes it does fucking matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard people argue that. Like, then
you don't know sports. Baseball, right? Shut up. Shut your mouth. You shut your mouth when you're not talking sense to me.
All right. Do we need to wrap this up?
Yeah, we're wrapping it up. So you are on your way out of town, headed to Memphis. So safe travels, my friend.
Thank you very much.
I'm heading to Youngstown for a little gathering myself.
It's a little weird that I'm going to Memphis on Martin Luther King Day. Yeah. It feels weird.
Yeah. Well, enjoy it. Yeah. And,
I'll, you know, eat some barbecue and not for Martin Luther King.
Okay.
While I'm down there, I will eat some barbecue because that's what everyone's telling me to do. Okay. That was not like I'm going to celebrate
by eating some barbecue? Phrasing, my friend.
Yes, see? Now this is where years later when we're running against each other, you say, did Jim LaHawka say he's celebrating the...
Yeah.
I did not say that.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. All
right, so just don't say anything any crazy. Just don't say anything racist while you're down there. How about that?
I'll do my best. All right. At Whiskey Congress on social media. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com. If you want to email us, thank you for listening. We are out.